Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining me from down the hall here at the Seaport Studios in New York is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys. By the way, shout out to my guy Ryan Gensler, new coach at University of Akron Women's Hoops. My new favorite person related to Akron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll finally come to Akron for a change.
You have a reason to come to Akron. I do have a reason to go to Akron now, for sure.
Good luck to Ryan and the Lady Zips. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, home of the red hot Dallas Mavericks, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Had to relocate from my normal office setup because the IT department's got some stuff going on with their real job. So we're making do back in the old digs here.
Unfortunately, the IT department couldn't keep McMahon's audio from not working, as it wasn't for a while. We thought we might not have him today for a minute. It was almost an unfortunate situation on Straw Poll Day.
You missed a
screen. The IT department really works overtime, I have to just say. There's a lot on the IT department's plate to handle for McMahon. So the Bontemps poll 3.0, as we're calling it at ESPN, came out today, Thursday. Bontemps, I'm sure some of our listeners have seen the results, but why don't you go over it for those who haven't?
I mean, I think we can skip past the fourth to 15th spots and just focus on the top, which is what people really care about.
Yeah. Let me just say this about fourth. Jason Tatum, the only thing I can guarantee you about this, the MVP race, is that Jason Tatum is going to finish fourth.
Right.
He had 90 votes at fourth?
He had 90 of the 100 fourth place votes, and seems like there's a Grand Canyon sized chasm between the top three guys and him, and there's another Grand Canyon sized chasm between Tatum and everybody else. So okay. That's the bottom of the poll. So Giannis came in third at 18 first place votes, 612 total points. And then obviously the headliner of the poll is Nikola Jokic finished second with 42 first place votes, 39 second place votes, and 19 third place votes, 788 total points. And Joel Embiid in first place with 40 first place votes. For those who can't do math, like maybe my guy in Texas, that's two less than Nikola Jokic. 45 second place votes, 15 third place votes, and 790 total points. So The difference between Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid with 11 days to go in a regular season is the difference between a second place vote and a third place vote. And it's smaller than the difference between a first place vote and a second place vote. So we essentially have a statistical tie with 11 days to go.
How many points is it?
Dose.
Oh, two. Like how many middle fingers I have that I would point at you if I wouldn't get in trouble.
You've been a little profane lately.
I'm just especially trying to wind my guy up today because A, I had to work overtime last night because he wasn't at the game, and B, I wish you all could see McMahon when he has to deal with these tech issues. Dude, it's just
I'm just not equipped.
It's like Yosemite Sam. It just the face gets that red, and it's great. It's great entertainment for us.
Tech savvy, I am not. As far as the travel issues, I can't take blame for that. It is what it is, but you certainly had your hands full last night. And
Bontemps was in Philly last night for Mavs Sixers.
No, we'll get to that later.
He was on cluster F duty. But, you know, the getting back to the old BS poll, I hate to break the joker, but the gap's a little bit bigger than the poll even states, because you try to get as many real voters as possible, but you still ask me for my damn votes every time. I don't have an actual vote. And I did stick with Joker number one on my ballot. It was, it's like flip a coin at this point. I am curious, how many of your ballots or replies did you get before Embiid sat out in Denver?
Zero. So, okay, that's interesting. So to walk this through a couple things on this before we go to my guy Wendy. So I was gonna do the poll after the game on Monday. The whole point of going to Denver was to be at the Nuggets Bucks game on Saturday, to be at the MVP showdown on Monday, start doing the poll the second the game was done, do it, have it come out today. That was the plan.
No wonder I couldn't go to Philly. Bontemps has taken wasted trips to Denver to go watch Embiid sit down on the end of the
kind of reminded me when I went to Phoenix to watch Kevin Durant sprain his ankle.
That's right. In the pregame warm-up, it was a very similar deal. So when Joel was ruled out of the game, I decided there wasn't really much of a point of waiting until, you know, Monday night after the game to start doing it. So I started doing it late, you know, probably 6 o'clock Monday afternoon.
His evening was much more freed up, Bontemps.
Yes, absolutely.
It was a little quieter watching Paul Reed and Dwayne Dedman go back and forth with Joker instead of the big fella. So, yeah, so I started probably 6 p.m. Eastern time Monday, well after everybody knew what was going on in the game. Probably 24 hours later, the vote was done late Tuesday night. And to your point, I think the fact that this came right in the wake of people being pretty fired up that he didn't play in that game is a benefit to Embiid's standing. I do think overall this is a benefit to Embiid's standing, because I think if we look at it as a tie at this point, I think the narrative factors are probably going to slightly lean in his direction because Jokic has won the past two in a row. There is some voter fatigue. Embiid has closed strong. He's had a little more momentum of late. But look, the truth is there's only been one time since the writers started voting for MVP in 1980, the 80-81 season, that somebody has won without having the most first place votes. And that was in 1990, when it was a very similar situation. Magic Johnson won because Charles Barkley had 37 first place votes. Magic had 28, but Magic was on 65, I think he was on 38 second place ballots. And Michael Jordan had more second and third place finishes than Barkley. And so that allowed Magic to edge him out at the end. We're looking at probably a similar situation here. It might not be that Jokic or Embiid doesn't have the most votes, and I still think there's an outside chance, because it's close enough, that Giannis could make a late push, because everybody's pretty uncertain.
How's he going to make the push? He going to be in first place?
Let's just do this as a hypothetical, right? The Bucks play the Celtics tonight on national TV. What, let's say Giannis has 45 and they stomp the Celtics. Then he plays Embiid on Sunday. Let's say he has another 45 and they stop the Sixers. Like, it's close enough. I don't think the chances are very high. I would say it's under 10% that Giannis wins, but it's close enough. And there's enough uncertainty at the top that you could have 30 votes go flip his way and, you know, maybe it wins. Like, it's close. Basically the point is, with those three guys, it's close enough. A lot of this is going to come down to placement on the ballot among those top three spots. Like, Brian, you have Giannis first, right? I mean, you said it on First Take. If you decide you have Embiid first and Jokic third, or Jokic first and Embiid third and Giannis second, like, those 5 points, three people do that, that could be the difference.
Well, look, I'll just tell you what I did. I voted Giannis first, as I did in the last straw poll. I voted Embiid second, and I voted Jokic third. We can get into why later. Had I voted Jokic second and Embiid third, we'd have a different leader.
Right, Jokic should be first. That's how close it is.
Just what I did. Margins. If you want to MF me, Denver fans, just what I did would have changed the poll leader.
Yeah, and that, like, this is like the past several years, we've had a lot of times where people like try to argue this isn't over at this point, right? Oh, somebody could win. Like last year, people were trying to tell me, oh, you know, Joel could win, Giannis could win, there's some other option, and I kept telling people, Jokic has too big a lead. It wasn't a huge lead. It was like 100, 150 points. I think it was basically the difference between Embiid and Giannis in this poll. But that was too big just between two people for it to really change. Jokic was going to win. The one time that the poll is flipped from the last one to the end was when Russell Westbrook won in 2017, first time I did a poll. But as McMahon knows, he was at the game. Yes. You had Russell not only be the first guy to ever have a triple-double that he clinched between then and the end of the season. He had that incredible game in Denver where he hit the game winner and everybody in Denver cheered for him. It's one of the most memorable.
That was when he broke the record for triple-doubles in a season. He scored the last 13 points to lead this huge comeback. He hit a 35-foot buzzer beater to give him a 50-point game. I mean, it was like about as strong a fit. And then the next game, the last game of the road trip, he sat out, which was the first time all season that he sat out.
Right. And
the finishing kick was ridiculous for Russ.
Yeah. You knew after that Denver game that Russell Westbrook was going to be the MVP of the league. Like, there wasn't really any debate about this. I don't see a scenario where we get
Daryl Morey was debating.
Well, sure. He was the only one. And I didn't even vote for Westbrook that year. He was going to win. But when you get to between now and April 9th at the end of the regular season, I don't see a scenario where we're going to look at this and know how this is going to go. I think we're going to find out when the NBA has a press conference somewhere, whether it's in Denver or Philly or less likely but plausible in Milwaukee, to announce they're giving the MVP trophy, called the Michael Jordan trophy for the first time, to one of these three guys. And that's not something that's happened since Shaq and Steve Nash back in 2005, which was separated by 34 points. This is truly going to be a photo finish down to the end.
I'm glad nobody was in their feelings about that Shaq and Steve Nash vote. I'm sure that I'm sure this will not have anybody.
Has anybody brought that up recently?
Fired up. Bontemps, are you going to reveal how you voted?
I haven't voted in any of these.
Oh, this is ridiculous. Come on, dude. You make me vote.
I try to ask. I try to ask 100 people. It's not because I have a vote. It's not like
you're trying to replicate the voting process. And you have a vote, you dimwit.
Okay. Now let's
more interesting to ask other people.
The Bontemps straw poll has been retired for the 2022-23 season. How do you feel personally about
as
the
of
MVP
right
race?
As of right now? I think I would lean very slightly towards Embiid, but I go back and forth on it every day. Last week, I thought I was going to vote for Giannis. Like a couple weeks before that, I thought I was going to vote for Jokic. Like I'm honestly not sure. And that was the other thing. Talking to people, when people submitted ballots, the vast majority of people are not like, this is my vote.
Right.
Like people are kind of like, well, this is how I feel right now. I don't really have a great sense of it. And to be clear, I asked people to basically just give me off the top of their head, what is your gut feeling on it right now? It's not like I want you to spend 10 hours researching it and think about it. It's like, all right, right now we're at this point in the season. What's your gut feeling on how this is going to go? Now, I think for most of these voters, if not all of them, I was just talking to Mike Greenberg here before we started, and he's got a vote. And he was like, tell me who I should vote for. I have no idea what to do. And I think that sums up how everybody feels, because as we've talked about throughout the year, all three of these guys have incredible cases, and there's not a negative case to be made against any of them. So ultimately you're trying to decide on these incredibly thin margins, and somebody's going to finish first and somebody's going to finish third. And there's really not a difference between them. So it's going to be a pretty agonizing decision.
Well, the difference is two of them have won two.
Yes, I was going to say.
One of them is 1-0. That's one factor.
It is kind of Embiid's turn. It is. Like, if it's close.
I hate to put it that way, but
it's not like you're saying, hey, you know, you got to distribute these things evenly. But, like, if you're like, man, I don't know which one of these guys to pick, then I would say the tie goes to the dude who has been in the mix for the last few years and hasn't yet won one. And it's funny, obviously Embiid is the one who's campaigning the hardest, even though he's pretending like he's not campaigning.
Right.
And last night he gave a little campaign speech after dismissing the Mavs and having a nice little chat with fifth place finisher Luka Doncic with big smiles at midcourt as the buzzer was sounding. But one of those things that he said there was, if one game is going to hurt anybody's chances, then I guess everybody should be out of it. Basically saying, hey, if you're going to hold against me for sitting out in Denver, then bleep you. What this tells me is people didn't hold that against him. And by the way, I think that is fair.
That's one way to look at it.
Well, I'm going to say, if you had Embiid number one on your ballot before he sat out in Denver, the fact that he sat out that game, whether it's, you know, density of schedule, load management, his calf was bothering, whatever, that shouldn't change your mind. You know, if you had him number one, right? Obviously, what it was a chance for him, if people were on the fence, or maybe people had him as a close second, if he goes out and has another 47-point, 18 rebound, you know, whatever his numbers were, he could have certainly.
It was a chance for him to end the race. That's what I would say. If he went out and had a dominant game, it could have ended the race.
Right.
But he didn't have a Jokic, but he didn't do that.
Jokic could have dominated too.
He could have. I'm not saying Jokic couldn't have, but I think Embiid had the ability. It was the end of a long road trip. They're on the road in Denver. It's a very hard place to play. If Embiid had gone in there and played like he did in the first game or something close, and Philly won the game, I think that would have ended the race. Because I think that would have given some, whether it's fair or not, it would have given people something to point to and say that was an MVP level performance. He did it in Philly a couple months ago. I'm going to vote for this guy. And maybe it would have been the other way for Jokic. I would say what him not playing in it, just it removed that possibility from the equation either way. And so because of that, we're sitting here in a situation where they're both tied. But I agree with you, McMahon. My thought in the wake of him not playing, doing the poll, I was very curious to see what the reaction to that would be and if it would push things away from him. And the fact that it's a tie after that, right in the wake of that happening, I think it's in the long run got a chance to be a positive thing for him.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Well, let's talk about the ability for them to improve their cases. The Bucks, I said, are in first place. Now, they play a game tonight. When this pod comes out, you will know what happened with the game against the Celtics. They played the Celtics at home tonight. It's the second night of a back-to-back for the Bucks. I'm not 100% sure who's going to play.
I'm pretty I have not looked today. I'll check right now. I would make a pretty good bet that they're all going to play. They all played in Denver on the second night of a back-to-back. They blew out the Pacers last night. And if they win that game tonight against Boston, which obviously, again, listeners will know what happened, they're going to be the one seed likely anyway. But if they lose this game, they're only up two and Boston would have the tiebreaker. They win this one, it's officially over. So I think they're going to be trying to play this one to win.
The Bucks have primed the pump. They didn't play Joe Ingles or Chris Middleton in Indy on Wednesday.
They set them up to play tonight against the Celtics and slam the door.
Okay, so let me just say that that's obviously a game that could affect Giannis's case. Although I think it's hard for Giannis to improve. They are in first place.
Yeah.
Philly is two games back of Boston. If Milwaukee wins tonight, which I would say is the favorite thing to happen. It rest advantage Celtics, but Celtics are coming off a bad loss in Washington.
And Milwaukee's just better.
Milwaukee's a better team. If Milwaukee wins tonight, it is one game in the loss column, and the Sixers have a game Sunday against the Bucks and a game Tuesday against the Celtics.
And those are a game Thursday against the Heat, and the Celtics and Heat games are both on TNT.
Right, but certainly they have a chance. They control their own destiny in a way. And if Embiid plays well in those games, that he, in my view, and I will tell you what Jokic has in front of him too here in a second. In my view, Embiid has the most upward mobility amongst voters because of the opportunities on his schedule. The big games, national television, and the fact that he could, you know, if the Sixers, now two games back with six to play,
and they don't have level of teams.
That's a big ask, but even if they, you know, if Sixers can get there, it would be a improvement of his case.
Well, look, they've already beat Dallas last night. Let's say they win against Toronto. Let's say they win against Milwaukee. Let's say they win against Boston and then win against Miami on national TV. Not impossible that they do that. I would assume they probably lose one of those games, but at least maybe more. But if like they rip off five in a row and he's won three or four national TV games in a row over the final week of the season,
and he's putting up 34, which is his average.
Well, he's like sealing games with spectacular block shots, which he did again last night. It feels like he's had a half dozen of those this season.
Well, and to your point about Denver, the thing that I think could work against Jokic too is because, I mean, they've been on cruise control for a while because they've been the best team of what's been an absolute joke of a Western Conference this year, and they've lapped the field essentially for the past few weeks. But, you know, they play Phoenix twice over the next week. I'm not sure they're going to really play either game because they're more or less locked in. They play Golden State again. I don't know how hard they're going to play in that game because they're locked in. Like, if they, like, Jokic has some opportunities here to play great against really big teams, and he very well may, and that could swing things too. But because, like you said, because Milwaukee and Denver have such big leads, it'll be interesting to see how hard those teams play. By the way, in an amusing twist, yesterday, Denver lists Jokic as questionable with a right calf contusion, which...
No, calf tightness.
I'm sorry. Yes. Same thing. Which is the same thing that Joel Embiid was listed out with on Monday, I thought was amusing.
Yeah, speaking of strategic, what is it, smoke ducking? No, and this one, like,
well known as SSD, strategic smoke ducking. Yeah,
strategic. I almost said duck smoking, which is tastier, but no, strategic smoke ducking, which I don't buy. That's why Embiid sat out, and I know, you know, there's this stuff out there. Oh, he sits out this.
He was definitely prickly about that concept.
Yeah,
and he let it be known.
Well, and this is how often he's missed games on the road against the elite center. It's like, okay, the guy's been hurt a lot too. Whatever. Again, strategic smoke ducking. I was trying to kind of. I'm not smart enough to figure this out, and I wonder how much the Nuggets analytics staff has put into this. Forget the MVP candidate. If you're the Denver Nuggets, I'm not one of these people who thinks the Lakers would beat them in a playoff series. That makes me in the minority at our company. but listen, you would much rather see the New Orleans Pelicans and the LA Lakers in the first round for the Denver Nuggets. I think that's fair to say. And I was trying to figure out, so if the Pelicans win tonight, would it be more or less likely that they would avoid the Lakers in the first round? You know, would that improve the Pelicans' chances of being the eighth seed? So I guess, like, if the Lakers are the eight going into the play-in instead of the nine, I was trying to kind of think through that. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to do the analytics. Maybe we could.
Well, the problem is when you're evaluating that, the Lakers play the Wolves on Friday night, which is a huge game too, because if the Lakers win that, they move into seventh.
Also, by the way, somebody pointed out to me, we can't just keep saying every game in the West is a huge game because all these teams play each other every game. It's just they're playing games at this point, and every game matters because all these teams are all bunched up. So the game.
All I'm going to tell you is this: when it comes to the Lakers, let me just say this: they have not been over 500 since January of 2022. It's been like 14 months since they've been over 500, and that was when they were 22 and 21. It wasn't like they had a 12 game losing streak or something. They were like barely above. Okay. They haven't been above 500 all year. They started off 0-5. Okay. Since the trades that they made, the big Westbrook trade. I mean, they made the other Hachimura trade before that, but since the Westbrook trade, they're 12-7. Now you may say, well, 12-7 isn't that impressive. Well, okay. But then when I tell you they haven't been over 500. And,
listen,
you know,
12-7 in the Western Conference is really damn impressive. Well,
yeah, Brian went on national television this morning and declared that the Lakers have a chance to win a title, McMahon. So
I mean, that is not what I said.
First of all, it's what I heard. And second of all, our guy, Tom DeCourty, the stellar producer of This Just In, texted me and said, quote, Windhorse is trying to match your spiciness today, saying the Lakers could be title contenders.
Listen,
Unprompted. You just said two different things there. I said they can win the West. I didn't say they will win the West. I said they can win the West.
Semantics. McMahon, how do you roll?
I'll tell you what, if they ever get above 500, then the parade plan will be like finalized. I mean,
well, give them 24 hours.
My goodness, we got, we, We got a whole committee. We got, you know, now Mac 8 seed, and we got Ramon on this. Wendy's, you know, just planning the routes. You guys got your little float ready. Well, what's going on?
Here's why. You guys know, like, I've banned Laker talk on this show before. Okay. Here's why. Since that trade, they're number one in the league in defense.
You know what they are in offense?
A 12-7, number one.
Do you know what they are in offense?
I don't know, but LeBron's also been 18. Out a month. And LeBron's
we're talking. Come on, okay. Dude.
And I also watched I watched LeBron play against the Bulls on Wednesday night.
Like, man, you know where the Bulls are in the East? You know where the Bulls are in the East? They're 10th. 10th.
By the way, the Bulls might get a little favor from the Mavericks. By the time the Bulls come to town next Friday, the Mavericks might be out. They might be trying to tank to keep their pick.
By the way, can I just say something about the Mavericks?
You can say a lot about them.
I was going to say, there's probably a lot to talk about the Mavericks.
They have three nights off in Miami before their next game. That's all I'm going to say. Okay?
Well, hey, the Mavericks have had some good times in Miami. 2011 at Club Live, they had the championship celebration. A few years ago, they had Luka Doncic's birthday party at that same spot, and they could have the 2022-2023 season wake at that same spot, Donna. I guess they won't stay over. They do have a back-to-back heading to Atlanta, but, you know, maybe they'll just...
Oh, they're not going to get a fourth night? They'll go to Atlanta. Okay, good. That's not a place for either. All right. All I'm gonna say about the Lakers is this: they have the number one defense for the last almost 2 months. They have LeBron coming back, and if you watch him against the Bulls, and I know the Bulls aren't good, but I'm watching him push off that right foot. It could go at any moment. Okay, I understand that. He understands that. He's openly pretty much saying he could probably have to have. He could have to have surgery after the season, but it looked okay to me.
He looks like LeBron in terms of athleticism, explosiveness, and all that stuff.
Okay. And we're talking about a Western Conference that look, Denver is really good and they're awesome at home and they're going to have home court through all three rounds.
Don't think they're all that great. If we're talking about a team can win the West.
You know who else is awesome at home? The Grizzlies. And they fine in the West.
Yeah. They lost to the Clippers without Kawhi and Paul George.
Oh, my heavens, dude. They didn't play Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr., Tyus Jones. Let's not act like the Grizzlies Grizzlies were going full strength in that game.
They play again on Friday night, so we'll see.
I did enjoy Ja after the game acting like people were being ridiculous, bringing up the fact that he said that they're fine in the West. Last night, it's like one quote that they've brought up over and over and over again. You were pointedly asked about who you're worried about. You said one team, which is in the East, and then you said I'm fine in the West with Malik Afala.
Yeah, but then he was also given a chance like that day or the next day to walk it back.
Given 150
chances. That's my point. That's why I'm laughing. He was like, oh, it's just people are just bringing this quote up over and over again. It's like, gee, I don't know.
Why
I don't
are you
like,
bringing up
you declared
old
you're going to win?
He's got to keep going up the chimney. You can't, you know, you can't be selective with the direction in your chimney travels there.
Look, I can't ignore a team that is playing, that is getting great basketball from Anthony Davis, playing very good team defense.
Can't ignore a ninth place team, McMahon. Can't ignore
them. That's what I'm first
well,
off. They're
let
in
me tell you.
Eighth. Can't ignore them. Can't ignore them.
The two teams.
Let's start talking about the Atlanta Hawks. Let's
talk.
Let's talk about
the best home records in the NBA are the two teams that the Lakers might see in the first round. That's all I'm going to say.
Listen,
I'll tell you what, though.
Wait a minute. I've covered the league for 20 years.
Grizzlies, Lakers.
How long you covered the league for? 10 years?
This is my 11th or 12th season, something like that.
McMahon, how many years you covered the NBA for?
I've had one awards ballot season.
How many years you covered the NBA for? It's been a long time.
Over a decade.
Have you ever seen a team that was in eighth place that had more upward mobility this year than the Lakers?
I've never seen a team that's been in eighth place has gotten more TV time. I'll say that
wasn't the question.
That's certainly true.
That wasn't the question. And I'm telling you, despite that.
Yeah,
despite
some of the years when, like, you know, like the West actually had lots of good teams and the eighth place team had won like 52 games, I would say yes.
No, there was no eighth team that had Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
The
no.
fact that they do have LeBron and AD, you know, that gives them.
It gives us reason to talk about them every pod, that's for sure.
But, sir, can I ask you a question? Do you believe D'Angelo Russell can be the starting point guard on a finals team?
That's a very good point.
I'm just asking. Just be honest.
No, it's a great look, dudes.
I also remember when Rui Hachimura was laid out to be like the greatest thing since sliced bread, and he's on.
You guys can shoot 100 holes in it, and I won't disagree with any of it. But you can also have to acknowledge that they are dangerous.
I know. We're grasping at straws to give us reasons to talk about the Lakers. I mean, you're yelling about how they play against Chicago Bulls.
And I'm saying I don't believe in that. I think that they should be talked about.
I definitely think they're good enough to lose in six games to a much better team in the first round. Yes, I do.
Okay, fine. I mean, that's like, I'm not debating that could happen, but I also think we are among the first to announce Laker ridiculousness and ban them. And so I also think it's fair. Just like I think it's fair to say Russell Westbrook had a great game, regardless of who was playing.
He
for
did.
The Grizzlies.
By the
Russell
way,
Westbrook had a great game and an important win
also,
for the Clippers.
I just want to say this because it's a great stat. So Robert Covington and Russell Westbrook combined to go 12 for 12 from three last night. You want to know what the percentage chance of that was happening? I had Stats Williams run the math for me.
I'm going to say
one in 250,000.
Holy macanuka.
Okay, like
knocking Russ. He had a great game. It just is a funny stat. That's all right.
Absolutely fair. But that isn't that the point of the Clippers is that they have so much depth that they can have something like that happen.
Well, did you see what Ja said when somebody asked him if he thought the Clippers could shoot that well again Friday night? He said, "I plead the fifth." That's a direct quote. That's what he said. As far as Russ goes, like none of us liked the Clippers picking him up. We all questioned it. We all said, hey, if they start him, it's a mistake, blah, blah, blah.
I said it.
We all did. Like you weren't alone on that one. Like we all said that. The fact that Paul George is hurt now and they don't know when he's coming back, like having Russ on the roster might be a season saver for them.
Well, and by the way,
they absolutely need him generating offense now.
Yeah. In all seriousness, like this is going to be seen as a dig, but I really genuinely don't think it is. You look at this team they had out there last night. That's the kind of team Russell Westbrook can be effective on.
100%.
One, he's out there. They started Eric Gordon, Terrence Mann, Ivica Zubac, Nikola Batum, and Russell Westbrook. That's a team where Westbrook is going to have the ball in his hands all the time. And you got a decent amount of shooting around him. Right.
His year with the Wizards, he put up great numbers. And they won however many games, 30, whatever. But I agree.
Like, the playoffs.
If he's on a team, he's still a guy who can raise the floor of a team and can win a game like that one last night. Now, again, they had some pretty hot shooting. We'll see. Memphis didn't play people. We'll see what it looks like in the playoffs. But again, that is the kind of game, like to McMahon's point. The Clippers right now, they still need to win more games. They got to lock in one of these top six seeds, especially with Paul George out. It's pretty important for them to not be in the play-in. If they're sixth and they get an extra week, maybe Paul George can be back at the start of the first round.
I
instead of having to win a game
them,
or two without him.
I think it's important for them to lock in the sixth seed specifically. They don't want to be the five seed. And we're going to see, and the Clippers are they're the kings of it. They're trying to play the kings. But the Clippers, we might get can they sign Daniel Otoro? Where's he? Because they might need to. They might need to feed him about 30.
You're referencing the game a couple years ago in the tank.
Daniel Otoro
in Oklahoma City.
Poku, two teams that were totally tanking for completely different reasons. The Clippers lost, but they won, and they got the matchup they wanted against the Mavericks. But yeah, like, hey, the Clippers absolutely. I think they'll probably try to finagle the matchups to get to six again, because all due respect to the Kings. And by the way, we got to do some beam lighting here. We got to celebrate the Kings.
Oh,
the
I fact got a trivia that. Question on the Kings. We'll okay. Just we'll wait. I was waiting to get it in,
but all due respect, right, there's no doubt. Like, I'm sorry, Kevin Durant and the Suns, or, you know, the Kings snapping a 16-year playoff drought. Like, come on, man. It's not close which one you'd rather face in the first round.
And also the Kings are a bottom six, five or six defense. I mean, which is what you want to see. All right, go ahead, Bontemps, trivia.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
And now to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bontemps.
So we got a three-part trivia question to celebrate a couple teams that have broken some streaks and made the playoffs. We'll start with the Kings. Last time they made the playoffs, 2006. Who was the leading scorer on the Kings? Last time they made the playoffs.
Was that Meta Sandefjord Artest?
On the team, finished second. Meta World Peace at the time, second in scoring, 16.9 points per game.
He was second. Kevin Martin. Was Kevin Martin on that team?
Kevin Martin was on the team, seventh in scoring.
Seventh?
Seventh. Okay.
That was pretty.
It's too young.
Who was their leading scorer?
Gerald Wallace.
Gerald Wallace, not on the team. He was already in.
It wasn't Brad Miller Charlotte. Who didn't lead him in scoring.
Brad Miller was fourth on the team in scoring. I thought this would be a fairly easy answer.
Golly.
And I Mike Bibby.
Mike Bibby was the answer.
Mike Bibby?
Scored 21, wow, scored 21 a game. Now, Second part of the question. The Cavs have clinched a playoff spot without LeBron for the first time in 25 years.
When 1998. You better get this one.
Who was the leading scorer on the 98 Cavs?
Sean Kemp. That was a layup for me.
That's a layup. I thought this was going to be.
If all of them were this easy. If all of them were about 1990s Cavs stuff.
This was the fun part.
All he could do was lay it up then. He couldn't dunk anymore.
This was the fun part of the trivia question that I did not think you'd get. I thought you'd get Mike Bibby easily. There's one player that was on both the 2006 Kings and the 1998 Cavs. Oh, I thought Brian
this is going to be my greatest moment in Hoop Collective trivia
it's
history.
It's sort of a layup for Brian, but I'm glad you got it. I'll give Whit McMahon a chance first, but he's not going to get it.
I have no earth.
Who is it, Brian?
No earthly.
Vitaly Potapenko.
That is correct.
Wow.
He played 9 games for the Kings in 2006. How did you know he was on the Kings?
Now a Grizzlies assistant coach.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, you might know it, McMahon, because of your Memphis ties, maybe. But I was going to say
that. I never would have gotten that, but I saw a note that the last person to score a playoff basket for the Kings in 2006 was Vitaly Potapenko.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah.
I definitely cheated, but also I would have had to know that Potapenko was on the 98 Cavs.
Well, I thought you might be able to guess it just because of that, and it would be random. He only played 9 games. That's why I'm surprised he was in the playoffs.
I should have just said I knew it. I should have just said I was an expert on the 1998 Cavs and knew everything about it, but
it's still a good moment for you, trivia-wise.
You know, I remember about that 1998 Cavs. This is a needed story at this point, but they played Indiana in the playoffs that year. And it was they lost in the series. I think it was still a best of five situation. And Mike Fratello was angry that when he called the timeout, Mike Fratello was the coach. He couldn't take his chair out of the cause the chairs,
they were like
the bench
linked
chairs,
together.
Were linked together with like wire or something. And so Fratello ordered his team manager, like in the first quarter, to go get a chair. to go to Lowe's and get a bolt cutter. And he wanted to make a point. cut the cord, like send a message to the Pacers. We're not going to put up with this. I think they lost in four.
Well, I was going to do that trivia question on Sunday, and then we got waylaid and we did it. But I wanted to shout out both those teams. And like you said, McMahon, I was bummed for the Kings fans that they didn't get to celebrate that. You know, you talked about with Spears that they didn't get to celebrate it on Monday at home in that game against Minnesota. Would have been cool. By the way, speaking, because as Spears said, we knew they were going to be Portland. Another incredible Stats Williams stat. Combined post All-Star break last season and this season, the Portland Trailblazers have 6 victories. You want to know how many times they've lost by 30 or more points after losing by 40 to the Kings?
What's their overall record? What's their overall record?
I haven't checked the overall record.
15.
Close. The answer is 13 times.
I mean, honestly, listen, there's tanking and then there's what the Tank Blazers do. This is like, it's embarrassing.
It's insane.
It's such a terrible product. It is really gross.
I will say this, though. It was kind of a cool thing last night. There were so many Kings fans there. At the end of the game, they were chanting, "Light the beam, light the beam." And it was kind of a cool moment. Obviously, they missed their moment on Monday.
It's awesome for the Kings fans, man. Yeah. I don't think there's you're not going to find a person in the league that's not really, really happy for the Kings fan. I mean, they've been one of the most loyal fan bases in the league for forever, and they've had to deal with just one miserable season after another. This team is super fun. The light the beam thing has been awesome. It's been one of the great stories of the year that they've been able to do this.
By the way, can we just play the lottery out? 14. You don't give these teams a floor, right? If you finish with the 5th best odds, you still might end up with the 14th pick. You got to play
6-35. By the way, 6-35 over the past 2 years.
I mean,
a third of their games have essentially been decided by 30 or more points.
Yeah, they're like, just don't even waste the jet fuel. Like, think of the
it's a long way up there.
Well, and I've talked to people in the league who, one potential way to do it would be to have losses count to a certain point in the season, whether it's 50 games in, All-Star break, 60 games in, and then have wins count after that and add it together. So it gives teams an incentive to play towards the end of the season. And it benefits some teams that are trying to play to make the playoffs still. And it incentivizes you to not be just having these games where, you have essentially your entire starting lineup not playing.
Well, that's the thing. That's what's so remarkable about this Blazers thing is that the play-in tournament has significantly reduced tanking. We have teams that have tried to get into it, and we have teams that have done some stuff in the play-in, like last year, the Pelicans.
Yeah.
Kind of used the play-in as a springboard, although they've had a setback this year because of injury. And yet, the Blazers persevered to have two of all-time tanking showings.
I tell you,
despite the play-in.
The Pacers tankapalooza right now is pretty impressive too.
Well, they did that last year too. They
did. Rick Carlisle's becoming quite the savvy tanker. I mean, going back to his Mavs days, Carlisle, he is becoming one hell of a
tank
commander.
No Chauncey, though. He's no Chauncey, though.
They had their first top pick inside the top 10 in like 30 years, and they got Ben Mathurin.
Yeah, they're like, let's get another one like that. I don't blame them, but I'm just saying.
By the way, before we go here, because Bontemps has to go do Sports Center, and then we're going to do this just in.
Wow,
he didn't say who was on the All-NBA ballot, but I do believe Mr. Domantas Sabonis got a number of votes.
Domantas Sabonis,
MVP on the BS ballot.
Sabonis was 7th behind Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's got a chance to, I think, be the second Canadian to ever get an MVP vote behind the guy.
He was on my ballot. Shai was on my ballot.
Shai will certainly get votes. And Sabonis would be the first King to get a vote since Peja in 2004, I think, Peja Stojakovic. And the fifth place was a mess because you had guys like Luka and and Shai, who are on teams that are a little under 500. I would have Shai on there because of how much he's elevated that group as opposed to the mess that the Mavs are. By the way, we should talk about the Mavs.
The thing is that De'Aaron Fox has been such an incredible clutch player, but it was Sabonis who got.
Yeah, if I was going to vote for a King, I probably would have voted for Fox. I could certainly see why he'd vote for Sabonis. He's been incredible, and I think he's got a very good chance to be the third team All-NBA center.
But they should both be All-NBA. They should both be all NBA.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about it with Zach the other day. I mean, the guard, and we talked about it before. The guard line for the all NBA is going to be bonkers. I mean, it's so deep. There's 10, 12 guys that have deserving candidacies, and you're only going to be able to vote for six of them. As opposed to the forward lines we talked about the other day, there's just not a lot of candidates.
All right, we'll talk about all the NBA next week. Bonthamps, you got to go, but you were in doubt. You were with the Mavericks last night. Another disappointing loss where they just wilted down the stretch. Philly's a good team. They win at home.
Yeah,
it doesn't surprise me they lost, but it was more, you know, alarming that they just got nothing out of their two stars down the stretch in that game.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can I was sitting there. We texted at the start of the fourth quarter. I asked McMahon how he thought it would go, and he thought Dallas would probably lose late. Philly would come back and win. I thought the same. And then they come out, and Tim Hardaway banks in a three. He throws in another one from deep. I was thinking, all right, maybe this is going to be Dallas's day. But when you have Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, and you score two baskets in 7 minutes to end the game, get outscored 16-5 and lose, and you get, you know, have terrible end to the second quarter, a terrible end to the third quarter. You had a fairly rough end of the first quarter, except that George Niang plowed into Josh Green and gave him a 4-point play at the buzzer. You know, Kyrie, I thought, summed things up fairly well, frankly, when he said we just weren't poised enough down the stretch of the game. And
when he said their play-in chances were essentially a cluster F, I thought that certainly
did sum the whole situation up. But yeah,
also interesting that Kyrie, who politely requested that nobody ask him about his free agency decision, last night started mentioning that, you know, his questions are about what's the future going to look like. That was an interesting thing that he brought up.
Well, look, it was a very, I asked Kyrie because he talked about things being in flux. I don't remember exactly how he phrased it since he got there. And I said to him, you've been through a lot in your career, but you haven't been traded midseason before. What has it been like? Which led to a very long answer where he talked about trying to get used to everybody in the organization. And as
I thought,
said,
it was a very good answer for Kyrie, who sometimes is all over the place. Mm-hmm. I thought it was fair answer.
It was a thoughtful answer for the first half of it, where he was talking about all of those things and said, to McMahon's point, I thought it was very interesting. He just brought up the big question is, what does our future look like? I was like, yeah, that is a pretty big question, Kyrie. It's a pretty big question for a lot of reasons.
Are you ready to start answering that one? Because we've been holding off.
That's right. And then he goes into this whole thing about how the situation is a cluster bleep, which it obviously is, and they're not in the play-in. And then he veers into this whole territory in typical Kyrie fashion about, well, I planned to finish the year in Brooklyn and I had goals there. And then this trade request came out of nowhere.
How did he get out of Brooklyn? I can't remember. I don't recall.
That's what I mean. It was thoughtful for a half, and then it just veered into another.
Okay. Don't worry about that.
Bottom line is, it's just crazy. It's just crazy that they win those three games after the trade, and then Kyrie and Luka play together in that game in Sacramento. And since then, this team is 6-14.
It's unbelievable.
A quarter of the season. Like, did not think this was going to go great. We've talked about this before. I couldn't have imagined they would be 6-14 in 20 games.
And you can't even say, well, you know, like at one point, JK was like, we just want to get healthy, you know, going in the playoffs. Dude, they were healthy and they lost twice in 36 hours to the Hornets. They're now 4-9 with Luke and Kyrie in the lineup together. It's like the roster is just ridiculously flawed. You know, whatever. Like, we shouldn't waste a whole lot of breath on a team that very likely will be eliminated by, you know, next weekend. Like, their regular season finale might not even matter.
I'll tell you what, too. I mean, I think you mentioned this the other day, McMahon, but I've thought about it since. If they finish 11th, they miss they finished in the last spot, and then there's no luck in the lottery, which, look, I mean, that would be amazing if they fell backwards into a top four pick, but the chances are low. They send the 11th pick to New York.
I was thinking about this too. I don't know if it's
in the Porzingis trade, which is already a failure.
Yeah. I don't know if it's worse to send the 11th pick to the Knicks or you get the 10th pick, but then, because you still owe the Knicks a pick, you only have one pick to trade while you're trying desperately to keep Luka happy before, you know, doomsday hits. It's a bad situation. I was surprised, speaking of Stats Williams, I hit him up. I'm like, how rare is it that a team goes to the conference finals and then doesn't make the playoffs the next year? And, oh, we have to go all the way back to last season's Clippers. And before that, I have to go all the way back to the 1920 Warriors. But the thing is, like, the teams that have done that in recent history, and there are several, no Kawhi Clippers, no Curry Clay / KD had left Warriors, no LeBron had left Cavaliers, PG had left the Pacers, LeBron had left the Heat, and Bosch missed half the season. Durant missed two-thirds of the season with a foot
Spencer
injury.
Dinwiddie left the Mavericks.
Yeah, well, honestly.
Well, Jalen Brunson left the Mavericks.
That's what I was saying.
Well, that's
what I that's what I told Stats. I said, what this list is proving, you know, 10-11 Suns, no Stoudemire. This list is proving Jalen Brunson's a damn superstar, baby. $104 million's the best bargain in the NBA.
Well, speaking of Spencer Dinwiddie, I looked this up today. And, like, there's a whole bunch of circumstances with this stat, okay? I'm not panging everything on this stat. When they made the trade, they were the eighth best offense in the league. Spencer Dinwiddie out, Kyrie Irving in. Since then, they are the 10th best offense in the league. Their offense has got – those guys missed a bunch of games, but we did not expect them to go backwards.
Luka has been hurt, and then Luka, like, the gas tank – ain't close to full, brother. Like, the load he carried early in the season and his conditioning concerns have caught up to him toward the end of the season for sure.
Well, and look, at the end of the day, this matters because, I mean, it matters on a lot of levels. Obviously, what happens with Kyrie this summer is going to matter on a lot of levels. And look, whether people in Dallas want to hear this or not, like, I said this was a desperation trade from the moment they made it for the reason you pointed out, McMahon. They did not have a lot of picks to trade. They did not have a lot of assets to trade. Mm-hmm. They traded Dorian Finney-Smith, and because they traded that 2029 first, it boxed them in on what they could really trade. And like you said, even if they do get the 10th pick in this draft, if they're not able to trade the pick,
they'd have
this
one
year,
pick to trade. Then.
They have one pick to trade, and they have nothing to do, and they are stuck.
Well, it's not necessarily true. They can trade the 10th pick after they make the selection.
I understand, right? But point is, they're in a real small box.
Oh, listen, man. This is a team building problem. It's a team building problem that they've got right now.
It'd be nice if somebody was going to chronicle that and maybe write a book about what it's like to try to have one of the best young players in the league and put a championship team around him. I really hope somebody, you know, really dives in and maybe writes a book about it.
Keep an eye on those shelves early 2024.
Ooh, look at that.
That's all I'm
all right. Bontemps
coming
up,
McMahon,
go.
Just like always. That's all I ask.
Bontemps got to go. Thank you, McMahon. Thank you, Jackson and Bruce, our producers. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you guys in a few days.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.